I didn't know her name. It didn't leak her name. This is at the Justice Department. I'm confident that the U.S. Attorney, the prosecutor who's involved in looking at this, is going to do a very thorough job of doing a very substantial and conclusive investigation. I didn't know her name. It didn't leak her name.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination.
I didn't know her name. It didn't leak her name.
Can't help it.
We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation.
Defying explanation. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Sitting in, guest hosting this week for the rest of the week, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Glad you could be with us here. We're speaking of pure imagination. We're speaking with, or we're about to speak with, Margie Burns, a freelance reporter in D.C. whose articles have appeared in Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Miami Herald, Detroit Free Press, Washington Post. But most importantly, her greatest accomplishment of all, she's now the Brad Blog special correspondent to the Scooter Libby trial out there in D.C. We're delighted to have her there. I'm told, just now breaking news, she has posted her latest story, I think, to the Brad Blog.
Yes, you did.
Scooping us here on the Peter B. Collins Show, but nice going. Can't think of a better place to do it. Hi, Margie. How are you today?
Hello, just fine, just fine. Oh, listen, I just, before I forget, I just noticed on Brad's blog that you have something about my appearing on the show, and you say from the courtroom. I do want to make it clear that it's deep night here on the East Coast. I'm not speaking from the courtroom. I'm speaking from my home, and of course,
I see.
Nobody would be permitted to speak from the courtroom.
Speak from the courtroom, although if this was CNN or MSNBC, I would make you stand out there in the cold in front of the courtroom. So you could say you were reporting from the courtroom, Margie.
Yeah, with a big picture behind me making it look as though I were in the courtroom.
That's right. And since this is radio, you didn't have to tell anybody that at all. You can, as a matter of fact, you can say you're sitting at Judge Walton's desk right now.
No. I have the utmost respect for the judge. I would not want to do that.
You do?
Yes, indeed.
You might not.
He strikes me as very fair. I am not an attorney, of course. But
I'm glad to hear that.
He strikes me as very fair and very balanced. Everything I've heard him say has been, quite clear.
I'm glad to hear that, because I've had a great deal of concern about Walton for various reasons and what he's done in the Sybelle Edmonds case. So, good. I'm glad to know that and to get give us your impressions, of course. Well, first let's start off with what happened today in that Libby trial. Who was testifying today?
Okay, today, most of the day was spent in arguing out legal matters between the defense and the prosecution without the jury in the room. So, in other words, most of the day, and I was there, they didn't start until 10:30, later than usual. I was there all day. Most of the day, in other words, was not testimony. The witness, the one witness whose testimony was covered, at least under the government's side of the questioning, came in the middle of the afternoon. Her name is Deborah S. Bond, B-O-N-D, like James Bond, and she's the FBI agent who is the case agent for the CIA leak matter. And her testimony was very interesting, to say the least. That's what the Brad blog post that I just put up is, a quick rundown of just what Libby covered, or what she, or what the, not she, but the investigators covered in Libby's two FBI interviews.
Now, this is actually...
Before I get to that, the arguments between the defense and the prosecution were also rather interesting, even though, of course, they don't contain... It's, different, because they don't contain sworn testimony. You don't have somebody in the witness stand speaking under oath. But one thing, one little item of information you could not miss listening to the back and forth, was that the defense is just adamant on trying to prevent any showing of videotapes in the you know, they're arguing over every exhibit that the prosecution wants to submit into evidence that has to do with videotaping. Like, for example, a videotape of Scott McClellan, you know, the former White House press secretary, doing a press gaggle and addressing questions from reporters about the CIA leak matter.
And on what basis is the defense using to keep that video evidence from coming in?
Well, they don't. Well, one argument they use is that the same material, or at least the same statements, are included in Libby's grand jury testimony. Now, I have not yet seen the transcript of that testimony, but I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm sure most of it, at least, is. You know, the basic issues are in there. Hey, there was this leak, and here's what we're investigating. Here are the questions. Here are your answers. You know, but the reason, another reason, or the main reason, I suppose, that they don't want the videos to come in is that, as the attorney said repeatedly, the videos would be prejudicial. You know, you have these reporters asking Scott McClellan whether somebody deliberately released or leaked.
Right.
Classified information, and of course Libby, I mean the defendant in this, you know, current matter, is not even accused of doing that. I mean, what he's accused of is on 5 counts is lying and obstructing the investigation.
Yeah. Now, what is the sense that you get? What would be demonstrative about these videos? In other words, why do you sense the prosecution wants to show them to establish
state
what?
Of mind? State of mind is the phrase that kept being used. The point is, I mean, you know, the point they're making is that regardless of whether Libby deliberately leaked anything, which, of course, he's not being, as I said, he's not being accused of or charged with, regardless
right.
of that, he had already shown in no uncertain terms that he was worried about the accusation. He was worried about the possibility of losing his job, being investigated, and so, you know, and so forth, and he, in that state of mind, in that frame of mind, he even went to Scott McClellan and then to the vice president's office, as the defense itself says, to say, in effect, you exonerated Karl Rove, now I want you to exonerate me. And then, once the administration had made that line, then, according to the government, you know, according to the prosecution, Libby had a motive to hew to make untrue statements to toe the administration line. In fact, he pretty much had to.
I want to get a sense. We got to get to a break here. I want to get a sense from you after the break about the mood in the courtroom and this notion, because it feels from out here that Libby is just throwing away the pardon, throwing away the White House, doing everything he can to save himself. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, and as well to point out the fact, you can correct me actually after the break if I'm wrong about this, but it seems like the CIA caseworker, all of this talk about, Valerie Plame, she wasn't even covert, sort of goes out the window, as Joe Wilson pointed out to me actually many months ago when I talked to him, that in fact it was the CIA who requested this investigation in the first place from the Justice Department. It hardly seems that they would do so if it wasn't if something hadn't been violated there, particularly the identity of a covert operative. We're going to talk to Margie Burns about that and much more after this break, and John Bonifatz a little bit later. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Brad Friedman.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has 3 locations to serve you better wherever you live. All 3 locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different, or we'll do the same old thing, take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540, KRXA.
I was not going to respond to Novak's article publicly. And then finally, Chris Matthews called me and said, I just got off the phone with Karl Rove. He says, and I quote, Wilson's wife is fair game.
I didn't know her name and didn't leak her name.
The president knows that Karl Rove wasn't involved. How does he know that?
Well, I made it very clear that it was a ridiculous suggestion in the first place, and I said it is simply not true. So, I mean, it's public knowledge. I've said that it's not true.
I didn't know her name and didn't leak her name.
It's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
Peter B. Collins Show. I am your friendly citizen blogger, guest hosting tonight for PBC, Brad Friedman. We're speaking with Margie Burns, freelance reporter, special correspondent to the Brad blog, live from the courtroom of, no, I know, Margie, reporting from today's Libby trial, where she was in attendance. Now she's, of course, back home. And before the break, I was asking, does it underscore, did I understand it correctly, that you had the CIA caseworker who was who had requested this investigation in the first place, which underscores the fact that Valerie Plame was, in fact, covert. Can we now put that aside with this testimony at all, Margie?
Well, I don't know who in the CIA requested the investigation. I can't. I don't know whether that's come out. But I have heard no emphasis from the defense on any point that Mrs. Wilson was not covert. One of the earliest witnesses at this moment, I can't remember which one, but one of the earliest witnesses for the prosecution testified in a very matter-of-fact way and, you know, so far without any rebuttal, that the counterproliferation division in which Mrs. Wilson worked was mostly covert. Most of the people in it were covert.
And one would think that this would have come up, even if Judge Walton would have allowed it or not. It seems like it would have come up somehow into this trial if that was not the case. I'm just, you know, sick and tired of these, frankly, these wing nuts who are running around still to this day saying Valerie Plame Wilson was not covert. What's the...
I think ignorance is, you know, lack of information has got to be a factor in that kind of line. I mean, I don't see that that argument would hold water.
Well, you're...
It's not specifically relevant to this trial, of course, since, you know, Olivia is not charged with leaking classified information anyway. But
well,
no,
you're...
I mean,
you're very generous.
I haven't heard anybody hammer that. Yeah.
You're very generous to say it's a lack of information, because if they don't know it by now, this many years later, I don't think it's a lack of information. I don't think they want to know, and I think they're disingenuous creeps trying to do anything they can to apologize for the bad guys here who clearly knew what the hell was going on. And, in fact, yesterday it came out that there was a note from Cheney that implicates the Prez, as he put it in the note. And that note we've got up on Bradblog as knowing about this. Now, what is the sense that you get in that courtroom? Is Libby, Scooter Libby here, and his attorneys, are they just saying the hell with the White House, the hell with our pardon, we ain't going to get one, we've got to save ourselves here at this point?
Well, I think listening, you can't help wondering about that, but I don't mean to disappoint you, but I certainly don't have an answer. Libby's got at least a 6-member legal team with him. You know, both the government and the defense have sizable tables surrounded with attorneys and, you know, other personnel. And Libby's got just as many lawyers working on his side as the prosecution has working on its side, as far as I can tell. And I have noticed when at different times different attorneys get up to, cross-examine the witnesses, that they're not clones. I'll put it that way. They're not all alike. I'm talking now about the defense attorneys. I mean,
yeah,
there's people they wouldn't be. But what I mean is that one of the attorneys seems to have a much more aggressively pro-president, pro-war attitude than I have been able to detect from anything else that I've heard in the courtroom.
So,
and I don't mean to sound cynical here, but that's the kind of thing that makes you feel sorry for a defendant, because there is, you know, the worst thing a lawyer can do is, I actually can't accuse anybody in this current event of this, but the worst thing a lawyer can do is not protect his own client.
So some people on that team...
So it would be a little bit odd. I mean, I have no idea exactly how the defense case is... I mean, I can't say how the defense case is going to go. The defense has not presented yet. We've heard only the government witnesses so far.
But you can confirm that some on the team seem to be perhaps protecting the White House, the president, while others don't seem to be quite as interested in that.
That's right. That's the way it sounds to me, just from what I have heard so far.
Okay, yeah. And now as far as Dick Cheney, because this is hard to tell from out here, while Libby seems willing in some of this testimony, they seem to be willing to throw the White House under the bus to a certain extent. Are they sticking by the vice president, or at least the guy who calls himself vice president, Dick Cheney?
I don't see how that could possibly, no, I wouldn't say so. One of the first things, when the FBI agent testified today in a very organized, kind of low-key way, she just went through point by point what Libby said in his two FBI interviews. And one of the first things that Libby said in his FBI interview on October the 14th, 2003, was that he learned that Mrs. Wilson, Joe Wilson's wife, was in the CIA from Vice President Cheney. He said he had learned that on about June the 12th of 2003. He learned it in a phone conversation with Vice President Cheney. And his note from that conversation is a an exhibit, you know, a government exhibit, a
sure.
piece of evidence, handwritten note, with about the same kind of handwriting we all have when we're on the phone. And either that or another one indicates that the vice president says she was in, quote, CP, meaning, you know, counterproliferation
right.
division. So it's obviously, you know, Libby, even rather early on, that is all the way back to October 2003, when the investigation was only about a month old or whatever it was at the time, you know, even then he was not trying to conceal the fact that he got his information and his orders from the vice president's office.
Now,
and given that he is the vice president's chief of staff, you know, I can't imagine what universe he would do that. I mean, you know, why would they?
Margie Burns, I'm going to have to point folks over to Brad Blog for more of your excellent coverage. Please keep it coming over there. One last quick question before I have to roll here. There was an item I caught, I think it was in Leopold's Truth Outs coverage yesterday. They talked about the fact that there was some, that the note that came out that we were talking about earlier that the references the Prez in knowing about this to a certain extent. Was one of some 250 emails that the White House had previously refused to disclose. Do you get the sense that more and more of these documents that the White House did not want to put out, but Libby has them and that they will be entering the trial?
No, I can't really say that I do. There have been rumors even that Cheney would be pressured into testifying, you know, Cheney himself, and somehow I just cannot imagine his appearing in the witness box. But we'll see. I mean, I cannot predict, you know, exactly what kind of defense will be presented.
He said he's going to testify. Hasn't he already said that, or has he just said, I may be called to testify?
I didn't know that it was that certain. You may be more up to date on that than I have been.
Well, and we know that Rove has been subpoenaed.
Set in concrete.
Gotcha. We know Rove has been subpoenaed, but we don't know if he's going to testify yet either. I'm going to have to run here. Margie, you're doing a terrific job. Really appreciate you touching base here. And go over to bradblog.com to see Margie's fresh report just up minutes ago, I believe, before you came on the air.
And not from the courtroom.
And not from the courtroom, but shortly thereafter, because you were there today, right, Margie?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure.
Good.
Margie Burns, thanks a bunch, our bradblog.com correspondent. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with John Bonifaz, who's going to fill us in on what's going on down in Florida 13. Oh, man. Election integrity, it matters. If we had any, we wouldn't be in this mess we're in. Back for our last segment shortly. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your friendly citizen, investigative blogger Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. More in a bit. Hey, come on out tomorrow to the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union. We'd love to see you there live. More info after this.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
People are talking about the show. Weekday mornings 9 to 10 on KRXA 540. Does it really suck less?
you guys are in many ways so self-referential that it doesn't let a guy like me feel like he can be part of the conversation.
We try not to be too self-referential, and we'll try to catch ourselves. I appreciate your call.
I wish I knew what that meant.
I wish I knew what that meant. Okay. But you're sucking less than you used to. Down in Monterey.
And good afternoon. I'm Frank Sullivan with a look at traffic on KRXA 540. We have a couple of things to tell you about this hour. One is on westbound 68 at San Venancio Road. You're going to find a stall. One of the lanes is reportedly blocked there. Again, this is westbound on Highway 68 at San Venancio Road. That, of course, a big connector if you're heading towards Monterey from Salinas. One of the lanes reportedly blocked. As we told you pretty much all afternoon long, still slow and go on the Fishhook from southbound 17, still through downtown Capitola, and southbound 101, we're seeing a little bit of tightening now, a tenant in the Coyote Valley. And that brought to you once again by Welch's 100% Grape Juice. The American Heart Association recommends a diet rich in antioxidants. So where can you find them? Welch's 100% Grape Juice. It's full of antioxidants. I'm Frank Sullivan on KR.
What is known, and the evidence is clear, I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter anymore. And it's not worth fighting for. This is our democracy. We'll fight to keep it free. You won't go telling me our vote don't.
No, you won't say it to me, but you can try.
Our vote is well worth fighting for.
You won't get very far. Fighting for every vote. This is your friendly citizen blogger, Brad Friedman, sitting in for Peter B. Collins, broadcasting today live out of the 1480 KPHX affiliate station down here in Phoenix. Glad you could be with us for our last segment. Going to have John Bonifaz with you shortly. But I must tell you, tomorrow I will be guest hosting once again for the mighty PBC, but we'll be doing a live town hall forum, which you've slapped together at the last minute. Who knows who's going to show up? I hope it'll be you if you happen to be in the Phoenix area. The fact that we're pulling this together at all, I call the miracle in Maricopa County. A joke that maybe only people in Phoenix will get, and maybe not even everyone in Phoenix for that matter. But anyway, come on down the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Union Hall tomorrow, 24th Street and Earl, one block north of Thomas. We'd love to see you there. Beginning the broadcast begins at 4 p.m. Arizona time. Don't be late. Going to be fun. Audit AZ, Arizona Advocacy Network, VelvetRevolution.us, and, of course, 1480 KPHX. Don't know if we'll have time or not, but if you want, you can try to call us. We may already have Dave on the line, but you can try to give us a call at 1-888-5-PETER-B. I've been terrible about hitting calls. I'm just too distracted and too busy. That's 888-573-8372. All right, I want to get right over to John Bonifaz here for the last few minutes. John Bonifaz, a democracy fellow at Demos, founder of the National Voting Rights Institute. Founder, right, John? Am I right? Okay. And now working with VoterAction.org on the contested U.S. House election in Florida's 13th Congressional District. Yes, it's still contested. Between Democratic candidate Christine Jennings and Vern Buchanan, the Republican, where 369 votes separate the two of them in the official count, as reported by the paperless ES&S touchscreen voting machines down there, despite the fact that some 18,000 votes have disappeared entirely down in Sarasota. John, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
I wanted to catch up on a couple of things in the few minutes we have left. I overbooked. Sorry. First, the latest down there in Sarasota. Where are we? What's the disposition of that case at this time? And then I want to get into the news of the Florida governor a bit.
Sure. Well, first, what's happened here is that there's been an appeal on the district court's decision not to allow access to the source code for these machines, which clearly is critical to investigating what happened. And that appeal is pending before the Court of Appeals in Florida. And Kathy Dent, the supervisor of elections in Sarasota County, had sought to dismiss the appeal, and the appeals court recently denied that effort to dismiss it. So it's proceeding forward with further briefing, and we will be filing a reply brief by the end of February, and there will likely be oral argument after that. The other matter that's happening is that there is an election scheduled in Sarasota County for March 13th, and Kathy Dent has indicated that she wants to use some of these machines again. Of course, the danger with that is that when you use machines, you can often engage in erasing the data from the prior election. So this has been already publicized in Sarasota County, her interest in using some of these machines, and I can tell you we're making every effort to do what we can to preserve the critical evidence in this case and allowing us to further investigate what happened.
Now, I had heard that the judge had gone ahead and granted her, maybe my info was wrong or I misunderstood it, did the judge go ahead and grant her use of X number of machines, not all of them, but just some of them for this upcoming election down there?
That has actually not happened yet. In fact, what the papers reported over this past weekend is that submitted to the judge. But there has been no court action yet on Kathy Dent's efforts.
Okay. Now, I want to, since we don't have a lot of time, I want to get a couple of points here. First, they use touchscreen machines down there, commonly known as DREs, direct recording electronic, that have no paper trail whatsoever. Now, huge news, as I'm sure you've heard, the Republican governor has come out with Congressman Wexler, the Democrat, and proposed, I think they're going to propose some $32 million to replace all of those paperless touchscreen machines with paper-based optical scan systems. Now, those have their own security concerns, but at least you've got a paper ballot. That, to me, is huge news, especially coming as it does from down there in Florida. But there seems to be this perception that, oh, if we only added a so-called paper trail to these touchscreen machines like the ones they use down in Florida, that that would take care of things. Would, in fact, if there was paper trails, the so-called voter-verified paper audit trails on the touchscreen machines down there in Florida, would that have taken care of this problem and kept us out of the mess that we're now in with Florida 13?
Absolutely not. I mean, the fact is the Sarasota story is really now the new epicenter of this overall debate with respect to DRE technology, counting and recording our votes. A paper trail in Sarasota would not have caught the thousands of undervotes that were ultimately lost in this alleged undervotes that were lost in this congressional race. And the reason is that most people do not engage in verifying the piece of paper that comes out of these machines where there are paper trails. And so you'll have thousands of people walking out of the polls not realizing that their vote that they had tried to cast was not being properly recorded and counted. That's why we have to have, at the end of the day, a paper ballot as the official ballot of record for deriving voter intent. And it can be scanned through an optical scan machine, but we ought to have something on paper that has either been marked by hand or by a ballot marking device that can be audited and recounted. And these DRE machines do not provide that ability whatsoever.
And so with the optical scan, you've got a paper-based system where, by design, they're voter-verified because the voter has actually marked it down. I mean, some people argue that, oh, the paper trail, they can verify that before putting it in, but it's really, it becomes a two-step process. They're much less likely to look at it, whereas with a paper-based system, OptScan system, they have to verify it because they have to fill in the bubbles. Correct?
Correct. I mean, the fact is it really gets to the philosophy of how we view the vote. If we view it as a right, then it seems to me that we don't have all these hurdles for people to cast their vote and have it be counted. If we view it as a privilege, then we pass on all these other responsibilities to the voter to, you know, go through the touchscreen DRE machine and then on top of that read through all the votes that have been printed out of that machine, make sure every single one has been properly recorded. I mean, this I think stretches, you know, what we should see the vote being. And I think if we're going to go back to the fundamental of the vote being a right guaranteed to all of us, then we have to have a paper ballot based system where we can properly audit and recount the process and ensure the integrity of our elections.
So it seems to me, I've made this case, see if you agree or not, but it seems to me if there was a so-called paper trail on those touchscreen machines in Sarasota, that the only difference would have been is that we likely would have seen quite as many alleged undervotes, but there would have been no case because they would have said, oh, look, it's there's the paper, it's their fault, election over, basically, and there would be no contest at all.
It would be a lot tougher to mount a challenge, and it would give people a false sense of security that we have solved the problem we really haven't. You've made the analogy yourself, Brad, and I think it's the right one. It's like putting a stronger seatbelt in a Ford Pinto. It's still going to explode. What's the point of the seatbelt? I mean, this is a disaster to have these DRE machines counting and recording our votes, whether they have paper trails or not. And I think that the Sarasota story shows us that we need to do away with this technology and have a paper ballot-based system that can guarantee that our votes are being properly counted all across the country.
Well, if I made that analogy, it must be true. So thanks for pointing that out. And I just hope that the Democrats in Congress who are putting together legislation, introducing it right now, figure that out. They close the door on these touchscreen machines. There's a lot of other security issues to deal with, but you've got to get rid of these damn DREs, or especially as we head into another presidential election. I don't see how this democracy can survive another one like it with those machines. John Bonifaz, thanks. As ever, short on time. I overbook. That's what I do. But I really appreciate you stopping by and your continued good work down there, both in D.C., up in Massachusetts, and now down in Florida. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Brad, for all you do.
You bet. All right. Thank you, John Bonifaz. And what, are we at the end here? We made it. We got out. All right. 3 hours. Well done, guys. I want to thank everyone. We're going to be back tomorrow. I want to thank everyone here at KPHX 1480, including Jeff Farias, Billy Foster, Ian Huff, Desi Doyen. God love you. Thank you for making it possible. Matt Renner up there somewhere in Monterey, I think. And, of course, to the mighty PBC for allowing us to ruin his show. Thank you. We enjoyed it. We're going to be back ruining it again tomorrow from at the same hour here. And we want to invite everyone in Phoenix to come on down to the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Union for our town hall special event, Election Integrity in Arizona and Across the Country. I'll be there broadcasting live. I'd love if you joined us. If you're anywhere near Phoenix, it's going to be a hoot. We're going to have a lot of people there, including John Brakey, who just walked into the studio. So you folks in Arizona may know him. Brakey and Jim March, holy cow, they're going to be there tomorrow as well. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Have I thanked everyone, Des? Did I hit everyone? Can I get the hell out of here? All right. Hey, thanks, PBC. I'm mounting up Trigger. Thanks for leaving him here for me. Thanks, guys. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. Good night.